Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. It is a Justice Mosqueda Tuesday, my favorite Tuesdays, because Justice is joining us. Justice, it is great to have you back. You can find, of course, Justice on Twitter at JUMOSQ. You can find him over at acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, great to have you back. How the heck have you been?
I'm pretty good. Coming off a win, right? So how could you complain? I mean, Malik Willis was under center. We beat an NFL football team.
What more could you possibly want in life? It was a very fun game. I was talking to Nagler the other day, just like anytime you don't have, you know, expectations or just don't even know what the expectations should be going into a game and you come out of it with a win, it's a very good day. So Victory Monday was fun. Victory Tuesday is still fun. We've got a lot to talk about. I'll let you just kind of get started. We can go in a million different directions. I think there's a lot of fun stuff to talk about coming out of this game. What was your key takeaway or the number one thing you want to go over?
I guess the top takeaway would be like, that was the most Matt's ever had fun, right? Coaching a football game, game planning, all that stuff. Like the variety that they had in their ground game was really impressive. I mean,
yep.
They were doing some like three back stuff where, you know, Kraft was in the backfield and, you know, they had Jaden Reed and Josh Jacobs, you know, splitting and gun. I mean, that's stuff that like, if you want to watch that in college football, you have to watch like Coastal Carolina, right?
Yep.
Like they did a whole spinner series, which is like, dude, you do that for youth football. Like
yep.
That's pretty crazy. They ran bash a couple times, which is bash is the BA and bash is back away. It's like an old Oregon Ducks type of thing, like Chip Kelly era type stuff where, you know, running back's here, right? I'm here, running back crosses my face. And, you know, we're reading the end man on the line of scrimmage. Yeah. If he bites on the, you know, inside run, right, to the quarterback, running back's just wide open on basically like what functionally turns into like a jet sweep, right?
Yep.
And then, you know, if they fly out to cover the running back, the quarterback runs it on the inside. Obviously, you don't want to run that stuff with Jordan Love, right? Like, I don't know how many times I would want Jordan Love running inside zone down right. The middle of a defense. They did it a couple times in this game. I think one time Malik pulled it.
One of them just was the run to Lloyd, right? The Marshawn Lloyd run that got called back for holding? Or was that something different?
I think the Lloyd play was bash. Too. But yeah, I mean, that stuff you don't see a lot in the NFL, right? Obviously, I mean, they had more carries than like any game in my lifetime, right?
Yep.
It's like the only season that they've had that many rushing yards in a single game in my lifetime was 2003.
I'm on green.
Yep. So I don't know, man. That was fun. I liked it. Definitely liked the second half a whole lot less when, you know, the Colts defense could finally stop a run. But the first half, I mean, I was on cloud nine outside of, you know, the fumble through into the end zone.
Yeah, that was the only thing that was certainly frustrating. And to your point, I mean, obviously growing up a Wisconsin Badgers fan in their heyday of just like, all right, we can run anytime we want and there's nothing you can do about it. I just harken back to that, or the Amon Green days in Green Bay certainly as well. And to your point, the variety of what they did, like running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers, everyone running the ball, zone power, random, like you said, college and high school, youth football stuff.
I mean, every time they were getting in pistol, they were just trying to run counter down their ass, right? Yeah. And it worked a couple of times, but yeah, I mean, so much.
And that the other thing too, right? Out of shotgun, out of pistol, out of under center, and just everything. And like they left no stone unturned. And I feel like sometimes when you have a offense that's set up that way, it almost sometimes feels like you're just spamming some of your favorite stuff and it doesn't have any cohesiveness or it doesn't necessarily fit together. And this had no feeling of that whatsoever. It felt like they had an actual plan that they could run stuff off of each other, that they were going to run stuff over and over until the Colts stopped them. They really didn't, like you said, until the second half. And I think by the time the second half came around, yeah, I think Matt easily could have adjusted at that point, but I think it would have resulted in Malik having to probably throw it a little bit more. And I just don't think he had any fear that the Colts were actually going to be able to put the drives together to win that game and put sort of, again, the burden on the Colts to go do that rather than having Malik start throwing it around more. I think he was fine to just say, you know what? We've had a lot of success running the football. I know they're selling out to stop it, but we're going to keep doing it anyway, keep running the clock, and we're just not going to put this in Malik's hands because we have the lead and we don't think the Colts can get it back.
Yeah, especially once Jonathan Taylor went down in the fourth quarter, right? Yeah. Or he, I guess his last carry was late third quarter, but he didn't get on the field at all in the fourth, right? So
interesting.
Once they didn't announce an injury or anything. I don't know if he was just tuckered out or what, but once Jonathan Taylor's out, right, and he was really the only guy who was kind of killing you during the game, you're just like, all right, let's pop this football. Let's see how many more seconds we can run off of the clock, right, and just get the hell out of here with a win.
What did you think of the overall job? Obviously, running the football and the dynamic run game that they had was a huge piece of this, but what did you think of the job that the Packers offense did getting Malik Willis ready for this game, putting him in some positions to succeed, and then his performance overall?
I mean, he was put in a tough spot, right? I mean, what Matt said in his presser today, it's been 3 weeks today since they were able to trade for him. Totally new offense. I mean, not that many similarities with what he had done in the past. I was pretty shocked when Malik, after the game, they were asking him, and he basically said that when he started in Tennessee, they were splitting all the reps during the week, and he basically only got walkthrough reps. He never actually got live reps. And the Packers, the lead up to this game was the first time he was actually able to get live reps preparing for a game week in his NFL career. He started three games previously? That's pretty insane, man.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I just want to almost pause you there because obviously we, talk about Packers and cover the Packers and we're not, covering the Titans here, but if I was covering the Titans, and I don't even know if they picked up on it at all, but that is a young QB out of Liberty, third round draft pick who everyone knew was not ready to come in and play that year. You're going to start him multiple games and you're not going to give him any live reps going up into those performances. That seems insane to me. And I could not believe that this was his first time going into a game that he had live reps of game time. It stunned me.
It genuinely one of the most unreal things I've heard from an NFL press conference.
Seriously.
Those are the things usually you have to talk to coaches and stuff. And it's after the fact, they're doing the postmortem and they'll, lean over and be like, you want to hear some crazy stuff?
Right.
It's whoa, really? I've been thinking about that a lot. But the fact that, huge for Malik. If Malik ever gets let go in Green Bay, he's going to have opportunities elsewhere because of what he's done today. From a career standpoint, right? He went from a guy who was kind of on the brink, we've seen guys flame out of the league, right? Josh Rosen or something, guys who are highly thought of. In the draft process and then just kind of disappear. He was kind of on the brink of that just because, he's going into year three. He's only really had a couple of poor performances put on the film outside of, what he was able to do in the run game. Now this completely kind of changes the narrative on his career. So dude, massive for him. He must be feeling great. That was my biggest takeaway from that. I don't think they asked him to do too much. They did have some real drop back, intermediate progression, passing concepts. It wasn't all RPO. It wasn't all quick game and stuff like that. His two incompletions, right? He had the one throw away and then he had the wheel route that he was just late to. That was the one play that I think he looked bad on from a quarterbacking standpoint, just from a processing perspective, right? The wheel was open and he got to it, but he got to it, a second. Maybe a half second too late. If you're going to take anything away and, save room for growth, it's probably that one. But he kind of executed what they were asking him to. They just weren't asking him for that much outside of, ground game stuff where he's reading the end man on the line of scrimmage and things.
Would you say it's mostly safe to say that Green Bay has their backup QB for the next two? Obviously, it's a 2-year contract left this year and next year. Nobody's going to take it from him this year. But do you just feel comfortable? Malik's your backup next year. I would assume you probably still draft somebody, take a lottery ticket in day three if there's somebody available. But are you feel comfortable that Green Bay has their backup quarterback?
Maybe. I mean, need always kind of plays into it, right? Like, I don't know if they draft Sean Clifford if the quarterback run didn't happen the way that it did 2 years ago.
For sure.
Right? Like, he might have been one of those guys who would have been top of the undrafted free agent board, and they just decided to pick him up because they didn't have the money to even pay, you know, what top undrafted free agents are getting in terms of bonus money from a salary cap standpoint. So I think they kind of panic picked on him. And then with Pratt, they were just kind of like, someone's got to push Clifford. Yeah. And it just didn't end up working out. I think with Malik, I mean, you just sit with it. You know, he's a third year guy. Like, hopefully Era goes up. Hopefully he gets better the more reps that he gets in Packers practices right now. Doesn't really cost you anything, right? Any sort of bonus money that he had is already eaten up by the Titans with the trade.
Yep.
This isn't a good college quarterback class coming out. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of depth slipping into the end of the draft. And then the other alternative is paying a veteran, and it's like,
don't want to do that.
I don't know. Like, do you have the money to do that? Like, if Malik looks okay, then it's not pressing enough to actually warrant, you know, spending $7 million per year on a backup quarterback, right? So I think you just ride with him at this point, unless, you know, something disastrous happens in, you know, the next couple of games if he ends up starting.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he probably just ends up being the backup. And again, maybe they take a flyer on someone. I mean, they'll probably have some sort of competition. Maybe that's just Sean Clifford. Maybe that's somebody else, but probably take a flyer somewhere. But I think Malik is probably the backup for this year, next year. And hopefully, again, if this is what he looks like 3 weeks in, and it's not like, again, that he overall did anything that's going to scare most NFL defenses, other than run the offense effectively, which was super important for Green Bay in this game. But he can just kind of get, you know, incrementally better over the course of the next year, then I think you feel very, at least a lot more confident going into the backup situation next year.
Yeah.
Anything else strike you on offense before we kind of move over to the defensive side of the ball, offensive line play, anyone stand out or anything like that?
No, I mean, I'm still pretty shaky on the offensive line. They still blow blocks. I know the running backs are getting explosive carries and stuff like that. I do think that it's going to be harder to do this for a couple of reasons against the Tennessee Titans. I watched Tennessee's first two games of the season last night after the game. They have pretty big boys on the interior, right? Like,
if Coburn and a couple of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be Jeff Simmons on the inside, and it's going to be that big dude, Trevon Sweat. I cannot pronounce his name
for Andre
right now. Trevon, see, it's something about like the rhythm of it that is catching me. I could spell it. I can't say it. But yeah, I mean, big boys on the interior. That's going to be tough to run on that nickel defense.
Yeah.
It's interesting. They play more too high and stuff. So you would think that it'd be easier to run on, but that defensive interior is just going to really put the Packers interior offensive line to the test in that game. Not really worried about their edge rushers. It's really just the interior. The other thing too, the Colts are now like by far leading the NFL in 10 plus runs allowed. Right. Yeah. And the Titans are pretty high up there on stuff rate, which is, you know, tackles at or behind the line of scrimmage in the ground game. So it's, if the Packers aren't consistent on the offensive line, which I don't think they are. Like, I think the backs are making a lot of good plays and, you know, turning a lot of bad situations into positive plays, right? I could see the Titans watching this game film and just being like, all right, invite the run and let's just beat them one-on-one blocks, right? And if you can't block, I mean, that's ball game, right? Unless your running backs are going to play like crazy. And I think the backs have done a pretty good job of getting more out of the offensive line than what's blocked for him for the past 2 weeks. I don't know how long you can rely on that, honestly.
Yeah, it's been interesting because I agree with what you're saying. There were more yards out there, and Matt LaFleur echoed that today in his press conference, that they easily could have had if they just sustained blocks, or like you said, just don't biff a couple blocks. And obviously it got a little bit worse in the second half as well. I'm still overly encouraged just because I think it looks better than what it usually has earlier in the season in years past under Matt. And I think hopefully they kind of settle into it a little bit more. We'll see what Jordan Morgan's injury is. And, you know, if that just ends up being Sean Ryan at right guard, and maybe that just kind of settles in a little bit more. But either way, I'm a little bit more encouraged maybe of just what it can be. Because again, we knew, and the Colts are just a bad defense. So we can understand that, but very, very bad defense. But just the fact that they were able to run the ball that effectively when everyone in the stadium knew that they were going to run the ball. I don't know. I'm still a little bit more maybe encouraged than having even some even with blown blocks. I'm not super discouraged quite yet.
Yeah. I mean, if we could block them up, like every time we block them up and stuff doesn't get squeezed, like that thing is going for like 7 yards plus every single time. So I think they have running backs, which is great news. Now it's just, can we get a little bit more consistent on the offensive line?
And maybe not fumble right at the goal line too is definitely helpful.
Brutal.
I mean, it's such a great game from him too. So to have that play completely sucks. And thankfully it didn't cost them, and they were able to still get out with a victory. But man, I thought going into that game, the biggest thing was just going to be getting points when you had the opportunity to get points. And they left 10 pretty easy ones out there with the touchdown and the missed field goal. And I'm like, you know, even though at the end we were like the odds that they go and hit a Hail Mary or anything like that, I'm like, Green Bay left this door just open enough where we've seen Green Bay do stupid stuff in the past that this comes back to haunt them. And thankfully this time it did not. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. What'd you see out of week two, Jeff Hafley?
Honestly, not that much different. I could do without the defensive tackles dropping into coverage on that one play, both of them. That was weird. Kenny Clark and Brooks.
Yeah, that was Brooks. You're right.
But the rotations are the more I thought the rotations were the story of the game for the defense. Kingsley and Igbari getting the second most snaps out of the edge rushers. Very interesting. You know, Cooper not getting that many snaps at linebacker after, you know, LaFleur said basically, you know, they want to work him in more and more every week. I know Indianapolis was not a big 12 personnel team. That's probably the most nickel that, you know, Green Bay is going to play the entire season. Yeah. But the fact that he wasn't even rotated in that much with Eric Wilson, it's still kind of like a 50-50 split between them for the third linebacker was interesting to me. Evan Williams getting in there and not playing that many snaps, but playing crunch time on that last drive.
Yep.
Weird way to go about it.
They were in dime in the last drive though. So Bullard was in the slot. Okay. Bullard was in the slot. Nixon was in the other slot. Stokes and Jair on the outside. And then Williams and McKinney were the safety. And then they also went some true, just like three safeties, like your
Iowa State type of stuff.
Yes, exactly. So literally three safeties across. And then you saw Williams, Bullard, and McKinney all back there. So they did a couple of different things, but they were definitely playing heavy defensive backfield looks, and that's why Williams was in there.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I just watched the I haven't gone back and watched the game. I just watched it live. And I remember seeing Williams in on the last drive, and I was like, what is going on? That's odd. Yep. You know, Carrington Valentine got a series last week. He basically got half the game in this one. So that's really interesting, too. I mean, that was the one position where we were all, I think every Packer fan who was following training camp stuff was surprised that, like, oh, this isn't an open competition. They're just having Stokes start with the ones every single day. I would have thought, you know, Carrington Valentine would have pressed him. And now we get to in season and that's when this competition starts. It's like, where did this come from?
I wonder how much the Valentine injury in camp affected that, because I still felt like that was going to end up a competition at some point. And then Valentine went out for like, what, a 2-3 week stretch of camp and then got back towards the end, and Stokes had just been playing there every day. I was not shocked to see Valentine get, you know, 9-10 snaps or whatever it was week one, just because I don't think it behooves anyone in that situation when you have a player like that just to sit them completely. But I was more surprised this week where it was just like, oh yeah, he's not only very much in the conversation, but now he's out snapping Eric Stokes, or at least in the very same vicinity. So I really liked what Valentine did in this game. I thought he outplayed Stokes by a little bit, and Stokes wasn't bad by any means. Just, I thought Valentine looked really, really good. Man, you think Jair chirps, man. Valentine is a chirper out on the field. I think even more than Jair Alexander, which he's got that swagger to him for sure. But yeah, a lot of interesting stuff. Colby Wooden deactivated for the game, so they only went with four defensive tackles. TJ Slayton only 19 snaps. LVN was the fourth edge rusher again. A lot of very interesting snap counts, inactives, and just rotations in this one.
Yeah, and then the other thing that was surprising just from an actives perspective, right? The Andre Dillard, Kadeem Telfort swap.
Yep.
Andre Dillard's contract just fully guaranteed last week.
Yep. I cannot believe we're already 2 weeks into the season, and after a bunch of crazy results from week two, including a big win from Green Bay, I'm already looking ahead to week three. And in week three, it is officially time to do some winning with Prize Picks. Right now, one Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right, only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss out on this opportunity. What I love about Prize Picks is that you can win 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. And Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. If your player leaves in the first half and doesn't return, your picks are still live. So obviously, I'll be going with Caleb Williams again, but I'm going with Christian Watson this week as well, who I anticipate will be much more involved in week three. Whoever you choose, the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. What are you waiting for? Get in the game with Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, GameTime has a brand new feature called GameTime Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through GameTime right now as we speak, and there are 2 tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, 2 tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, GameTime has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or GameTime will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with GameTime. Download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download GameTime today. What time is it? Game time. So it's funny because going into week one, I predicted that Telfort would be active and Dillard would be inactive. Or at least I was like, I think it's up for debate and I'm actually intrigued. Mostly because I thought Telfort gives him a little bit more versatility on game days, because I think Dillard is just a left tackle. I don't think he like has any real interest, or like he has not played well at right tackle. I think he might just be a left tackle, whereas Telfort will give you left tackle, right tackle, and they've even experimented with him at guard in mini camps and stuff. So it just felt to me like maybe that would be one of the determining factors when you only get so many guys on game day, of maybe just a bit more versatility. And then they activated Dillard game one. I'm like, oh, all right, well, that solves that. It's just going to be Dillard. And then week two, it's already Telfort. And then I'm immediately thinking, all right, Malik Willis at QB, are they going to go some 6 offensive linemen and want Telfort in as that big, beefy, extra offensive lineman? I'm like, I bet we see some 6, and then we didn't see a single snap of 6 offensive linemen. So I don't know what the determining factor was there, but that was definitely interesting as well.
Yeah, I think personnel was a lot of this game, because most of the other stuff, I mean, like Indy did what we expected. They were a gun football team on the offensive side. They ran cover 3 on the defense, right? And it's just, okay, once things become that simple, and the Packers, what's their primary, you know, objective on the offensive side? They want to run the ball. It just becomes like an execution thing. So I was paying attention to the personnel a lot during the game.
So a couple of those personnel things that I think have become some fairly decent talking points on the Packers sphere already: Quay Walker and Keyshawn Nixon. And just interested your thoughts. I think semi strong feelings on both of them. I don't think anything's happening to Quay anytime in the near future. I think he's going to stay the middle linebacker. I don't see that changing anytime soon. I would argue not a great start to the year for Quay, but a lot of the stuff that's been in front of him along the defensive line has caused a little bit of chaos and some weird situations. And I think everything in front of him can be better at times, which would make his job a bit easier. But let's just start with Quay and the linebackers. Your thoughts on Quay's performance through 2 weeks, and then maybe, you know, what do you think is the best way to utilize these 4 or 5 linebackers moving forward?
Quay hasn't played well, and it's not just because of ball him in the face mask, right? Yeah. I don't think he's played well. the problem is McDuffie's kind of been getting exposed too at linebacker. So these are numbers from Next Gen Pro or NFL Pro, which uses the Next Gen stuff. It's all the player tracking models. So when he's the closest defender, right? He has turned 41.
This is Quay.
This is McDuffie. This is McDuffie.
Okay, it's McDuffie. Right.
He's turned 41 total coverage snaps into 66 yards when he's the nearest defender and a touchdown. Relative to the average linebacker, that's about 57 yards given up more than the average linebacker over that time. And that ranks 62nd out of 65 qualifiers, right? So McDuffie's not playing well either. I mean, do you really want to play Eric Wilson that many snaps? Do you really think Adrian Cooper is ready for that many snaps? I mean, we all knew coming into the year this was going to be their weakest unit, right? And it's just, you know, someone's got to step up at some point. So Adrian Cooper, Eric Wilson, when you're in the game, make the most of it.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing. I've been a little bit higher on McDuffie so far, and obviously I know that's a damning statistic. I think a couple of those coverage snaps, specifically the one to Saquon on the wheel route last week, I think that's a tough look for any linebacker in that situation.
Yeah, it was more the Eagles higher game than this past game, for sure.
Yes, very much. And I definitely thought he played better in this one. That being said, I'm not exactly head over heels over more McDuffie. Honestly, you can't. What, he played like 50 out of 56 snaps in this one or something to that effect? He only missed a handful of snaps in this one. So I'm not exact. And it was probably just the dime looks in the very end of the game, now that I'm thinking of it. I don't think there's probably anything else he missed. So I don't necessarily think that that's the answer. I'm with you. I don't think Edgerrin's ready yet. And clearly they don't think he's playing seven snaps. They clearly don't think that he's ready for that specific situation. I don't think Hopper's clearly ready for that situation. And yeah, I think Eric Wilson, I almost equate Eric Wilson to like the defensive version of like Mercedes Lewis, where like you weaponize that guy and the right amount of snaps and he can still be very useful for you. But if you play, you know, Mercedes like 60 snaps a game, it's probably not going to go very well. I think, you know, Eric Wilson, not obviously same age and slowness and whatever, but like to some extent, I think he has a very specific role. I think that role is going very well for him. I'm not super keen on necessarily changing it either. So I'm right there with you. I think this is going to be Quay, but I definitely think he needs to start playing better if at all possible at this point.
Yeah. Again, it's not been good. You asked me about Keyshawn too.
Yeah.
This is, you know, basically the same type of statistic, right? It's how many yards have you given up relative to other players at your position compared to how many snaps you've played, right?
Yep.
Keyshawn Nixon in the slot specifically ranks 35th out of 39 qualifying slot defenders this year. So he's given up about 35 yards more than the average slot defender over the, 30 or 53 snaps that he's taken. So he's not been playing good either. Keyshawn is the one that's the position where I'm like, okay, if you want to change things up and you think you have something in Stokes and you know, you have something in Stokes and Carrington Valentine and Jair and Bullard and Evan Williams, there's ways to shake up that lineup where you can, you know, if you don't think Keyshawn is one of your best five, right?
Yep.
You can get him off of the field. Linebacker, I think it's tougher for me. So I don't know if they want to do that, go for it. Kind of a bummer for Keyshawn to start the year because no one is kicking to him. And then you have him struggling on defense too.
And I think the thing for me is I'm a Bullard as a safety guy. And I know I don't think I'm necessarily quite on an island there, but I think there's a lot of people that want to see Bullard in the slot, and I'm not necessarily opposed to it. And I think there's ways to do that a handful of times per game and mix it up a little bit more. And I'm totally cool with that. I think he's a safety. I think he's best as a safety. And I've really liked what he's looked like as a safety so far. And then I'm more intrigued in the, like, to your point, if Carrington and Stokes are both, you know, willing, or like you feel comfortable playing both of those guys as sort of starting corners on the outside, which I think is fair. Like in some of these like third and 12 situations, can you get Jair in the slot and put Carrington and Stokes on the outside, or maybe try Carrington on the slot in a couple different occasions? Like, I'm not saying it needs to be on first down. I don't think you want to see Jair taking on blocks with that shoulder or anything like that, but in very obvious passing downs on third and longs, like that to me is where there's a conversation to be had a little bit more.
No, I agree with you. I'm with you 100%. play games with him. You have enough guys defensively right now in the secondary to be able to kind of play matchups and stuff. And I encourage the team to do it.
I want to go back to the Bullard thing too, because I do think there's a way on some of the early downs where you're maybe expecting run a little bit more. Let's see what Bullard can do maybe on some of the early downs in the slot and get Evan Williams at safety. I'm totally cool with that. And then maybe more of your second and, or just like unknown down in distances where it could easily either be a pass or a run, and you feel more comfortable with maybe Nixon kind of being like the middle guy. All right, let Nixon do that. And then in some obvious passing downs, let it be Jair and put Carrington and Eric on the outside. Like, I think there are ways to mix and match and get that, maybe moved around a little bit more. So yeah, I'm totally cool with that. I just, to me, the answer is not any one guy 100% of the time. I don't think it's Bullard. I don't think it's Williams. I don't think it's Jair. I don't think it's Keyshawn. I do think that might be a position that you just have to mix and match a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, it's tougher for the defensive play caller, but Halfley's in the booth, I mean, he'll be able to see who's in the damn game. So,
and like, that's, Halfley kind of said coming in, like, he wanted to be able to put, players in positions to succeed and be multiple and give different looks. And again, I know it's a little bit more difficult, but I think they can, I trust Halfley to navigate that if that's the direction that they ultimately want to go in. But so far it's been Keyshawn's job, and we'll see if he can kind of just earn that and make it his and rightfully so. But I think there's definitely a step up that he can still go there at that position. Anything else defensively before we kind of jump to Packers, Titans, and a couple other things?
Defensively, no. I mean, we hit on a lot of it. We kind of skimmed by the TJ Slayton number, I guess. Yeah. But him being fourth in the rotation at defensive tackle, despite getting the start, I think we're learning. We're doing the thing, right? We're seeing changeups on the line of scrimmage where, I told you before the season, I was like, I don't know if Preston and Slayton can play that many snaps in this system, because you want to be small and you want to rush the passer. Everyone thinks, 4-3 defensive line, oh, you're down a guy, you want to have huge dudes. No, you want to get in the back. In the NFL, you want to get in the backfield if you're playing four down. And I think, we started to see Preston and Slayton both get eased out. Kicking game. Oh, go ahead.
Did you see the NASCAR-ish package?
Yeah.
It's just for people at home. We got LVN, Enagbare, Rashawn Gary, and Preston Smith all on the defensive line together in a four-man front, all rushing the passer. Twists and stunts on both of them. LVN, the guy, I think they got pressure on both of those plays as well. So it was interesting. It worked out a little bit.
From the kicking game, just so I talk about this so I don't forget.
Yeah.
EPA on field goals, Braden Narveson, second to last in the league behind Kid York.
By the way, who's no longer employed by the Washington Commanders. So he's actually last of employed kickers in the NFL because they cut York and went with Seibert. And then I think Seibert went 7 of 7 or 6 of 6 or 7 of 7 this past week. So something to that effect, at least.
So Narveson is one of three kickers right now who's missed multiple field goals. One is unemployed and the other is Justin Tucker. So kind of a weird bunch.
Yeah, Tucker's got a little bit banked up to kind of get through that a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, weird year again. Like, so much stuff is happening that we can't focus on kicker. I do think that he's kind of on the bubble, though. I mean, one more of these weeks, right? And I think conversations start to happen. So
the frustrating thing, and now Austin Seibert, his long was 45 in that game, although he did make his 45 yarder, which I guess is noteworthy, is like, that was kind of one of the other guys that was out there, coming off of camp, a Jets kicker, that you're like, that would be potentially maybe the other one besides Narveson that they could go with. And Seibert comes in last week for Washington and literally goes 7 for 7. Again, only long of 45. So it's not like he crushed any big ones or anything like that, but still 7 for 7 day. Not too shabby.
Just watching like the last two games, right? We're recording this during Monday Night Football, but like, I saw Younghoe Koo like nail one. I watched Kyahmi Fairbairn hit everything night against the Bears. He's so consistent. He just gets hurt. Like, I'm just jealous, especially with how all of this stuff is changing from like the just special teams in general, right? So you're starting with the ball on the 30 most of the time. One first down and you're functionally, around field goal range, basically.
For some of these really good kickers. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Cowboys.
Yeah. Like, the math has kind of changed on all that stuff. I would be interested. I haven't looked at it because I've been knee deep in numbers all day today already. As you guys could probably tell, I haven't looked at it, but I'd be really interested in seeing like what field goal kicks per game looks like right now. I know passing touchdowns and stuff is down. Here's an interesting stat for you. All right. I just looked at this. So everyone's going to talk about averages on the kickoff.
Yep.
Do not look at the averages. This is something that you're going to have to look on a team by team basis. Okay. The New Orleans Saints have put 18 balls into play this season.
Okay.
There are 15 teams: the Falcons, Rams, Bengals, Lions, Jaguars, Patriots, Eagles, Colts, Browns, Packers, Chiefs, Vikings, Jets, Steelers, and Giants, who have combined to put 20 balls in play.
That's crazy. Right?
So when you're looking at this field goal stuff, you really have to look at like, are we playing one of the few teams that are actually going to kick off the ball? New Orleans, Washington, with two kickers, as you pointed out,
yep,
and Chicago have all kicked, all had touchbacks at around 20% or lower. And then everyone else is basically over 50%. The only other teams that are around 50% are the Carolina Panthers. They've kicked off four times, if you can believe it, over two games.
Oh, I believe that.
That's a horrendous stat. And then the Tennessee Titans, who are 3 of 7 on touchbacks. So they kind of put it into play, but it's a pretty small sample size, and it's close to 50-50. Titans, from a special teams perspective, super weird. They let a huge return to the Chicago Bears, which is maybe one of the reasons why they're, you know, starting to kick touchbacks now too. They've right. also had punts blocked in both of their games so far. This, mind you, with Stonehouse, who's probably, you know, if not the best punter in the league, he's definitely
up there. Conversation.
Yeah, so definitely a weird special teams unit in year one under Callahan.
All right, guys, it's the best time of year. Football is back. We're talking NFL Sundays, college football Saturdays, and that glorious grind of fantasy football lineups. But listen, while you're over here making sure your fantasy team is dialed in, don't let your personal grooming become the guy that gets left on the bench. Let's be honest, nobody wants to fumble their grooming routine. But that's where Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0 Ultra comes in, acting as your all-in-one grooming playbook. From keeping things sharp below with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra to taking care of those rogue nose and ear hairs with the Weed Whacker 2.0, this is the lineup that'll keep you looking and feeling like a champ on and off the field. So join the over 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for kickoff by heading over to manscaped.com. Use the code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Trust me, you'll be drafting the real MVP of grooming this season. If you haven't tried the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra Groin and Body Hair Trimmer, this is the franchise player of your grooming roster. With precise trimming capabilities, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is built for performance. It's reliable, efficient, and gets the job done without fumbling. So what are you waiting for? Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. Stay on top of your grooming game and be ready for anything this season throws your way.
Yeah, very much so. The Titans in general, very interesting team. And I'm just kind of in that realm. Titans early 3-point favorites in that game, which smells a bit fishy, especially when Rob Domofsky says that Love was, quote, really close to playing, and that the injury situation, the questionable, was not some charade. So I don't know, like, we are getting the Ian Rappaport, like, it is going to be several weeks, and, you know, and then a couple other reports that it's like they're hoping he's going to be back for the Rams. And then Domofsky reports he was super or not, or he was really close to playing and it was not some charade. And then you look at the line and like, this isn't even like it's off the books right now because we don't know who's going to start at quarterback. It's literally Titans -3. At least it was right before we started recording this. So like, I am thoroughly confused at this point.
Welcome. I'm with you. I mean, we had the Rossini stuff saying, you know, hey, Ryan Tannehill, maybe he ends up coming in. Then
That's right.
Pelissero immediately was like, no, they never did that. LaFleur went in the presser and was like, I can't believe the stuff that gets written out there. So, I mean, I feel like it's been equal energy on both sides of the Love thing the entire time since the injury. And one side is lying and we don't know who the heck it is. So
I guess we'll find out.
I'm assuming that it's going to be Malik just because I want to get my hopes up.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll have to see. The one good thing is Tennessee doesn't have much of a pass rush. That's one spot where they really struggle. I mean, Arden Key is getting, you know, huge snaps for them. He's not very good at all. Harold Landry is kind of, you know, an up and down type of a player.
Yep.
And those are kind of their two major pass rushes right now. It's definitely, you worry more about the run stuffing ability for them and Jeff Simmons for sure on the defensive side. Do you, like schematically, you're going to get a lot of like what Joe Barry ran in the past, right? If you play 12 personnel or whatever, they're going to play that too high quarters defense. The corners are going to be off. They're going to jam up the defensive interior and try to make sure that you don't run. I don't know if they want that. It would be interesting to see how Green Bay combats that. And, you know, they can't have inside run or anything like that, but Matt's gone against that defense for however many years, right? And nickel, it's, you know, kind of the same nickel everyone runs. They play a lot more too high than they do single high. So it's nothing too crazy. Tennessee on the offensive side, they have a lot of like okay players. They don't have like a lot of stars. Yeah. I forgot Nuke was on the team until I watched the second game. Did not see him at all the first game. Calvin Ridley has a couple of bozo plays in him every once in a while. The one thing I will say, they do a lot on the offensive line. You could tell, you know, the two Callahans are there, yeah, and they definitely made that an emphasis. I don't know if they have like really good people movers, but they do a lot. Levis, they're not afraid to run him. They're running bash and stuff like that. The concept that we talked about earlier, yep, with him, he's going to run and then he'll get a first down. He'll flex. He'll point at his own sideline. Like he's kind of a nut job. You know, big dude, athletic, big arm, can't complete that many passes, but definitely has some ability.
And just get him to like vomit up a ball every once in a while, like he is apt to do with the last couple weeks.
He's done that the last two games, and he tried to, against the Bears, pitch a ball back on the 3rd and 5 once he had already crossed the first down line. Like he looks at the guy and thinks about it, and then is like, nah, I shouldn't. So yeah, he's going to do a couple of bozo things. Again, Calvin Ridley's another one like that.
He's got the Green Goblin mask just staring at him at all times, being like, do it, you know you want to do it.
He lets intrusive thoughts win.
Win sure. More often than he should. Yeah. Hopefully that continues this week. The 3-point line still seems very fishy to me overall, but I guess if Green Bay has a backup QB, Tennessee's going to be completely desperate for a win. It's a home game for Tennessee. I don't know. And I know Green Bay is not just going to be able to run the same offense in second consecutive week. What sort of wrinkles do you think Green Bay could come up with if it is Malik Willis?
I mean, that's my biggest concern, right? It's that, you know, you kind of put the film out there and I mean, short of getting under center and running the damn triple option, right? Like how are you going to, what more can you do in the ground game? You showed all your auxiliaries.
A couple things. They didn't do a ton of bootleg in this game. Get him out on the move. I'm wondering if we see a little bit more of that. We didn't see a ton of just straight up read option. We saw a little bit, but not a ton of straight up read option. I'm wondering if you do that. And I wonder if you do, you know, especially if Jordan is closer, do you do like a little bit more like quarterback power and just let him maybe run a little bit more? Like those are the three things that I'm like, they didn't show a ton of that. And those could at least be a few wrinkles that they didn't use a ton of yet that maybe they could get to more in this game.
Yeah. I mean, and then hopefully you can build on what you already did. So yes, you don't have to throw all that stuff out. Right.
And we didn't really see them do like the, we didn't see him really do a single like play action, like deep shot as well either. Not again that you're like, that's what you can build the offense out of, but you know, I could easily see them maybe feeling a little bit more comfortable to take one or two of those, especially if they're going to get some single coverage on the outside. You can get a couple of those, maybe throwing up to Romeo or Christian and see if they can, you know, come down with one like Romeo did this past game.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. It's definitely something that I'm going to track like in the first quarter for sure. Like I'm just going to be looking at Tennessee's coverage shells. Yeah. And just trying to see, like, are they still staying in too high and, you know, kind of inviting run game? Or did they change their game plan from the first 2 weeks and they're adding an extra guy to the box? Because Indianapolis wasn't a team that we had to worry about that. They're going to play single high the entire game no matter what. Yeah, so Tennessee is kind of like the inverse of that. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I think Green Bay will try to play more 11 in this game just because I think you want to be able to run inside, right? or at least have that option. And against that Tennessee interior, I just don't think you're going to be able to do it when you're in 12 personnel or something like that. And they're just jamming everyone inside, you know, in between the B gaps. Right. So I think, you know, maybe that is one reason why they haven't done much of the play action game, is because they're in 11 personnel more than they are in 12 or anything like that.
Well said. Poor Luke Musgrave. Another low snap game for him coming up, if that ends up being the case. Last but not least, I have to have your thoughts, because I want to kind of, I don't know, this is crazy to me, but Bryce Young benched in Carolina. Your thoughts on what's going on in Carolina and the benching of Bryce Young?
Oh, man. I mean, it's bad, right? Like, whenever it's week two, you're getting memed to hell. Your fans are, like, already bailing out of stadiums in this, you know, second half of the season opener, right? Yep. And you're on the press, you're in the press conference, and you're like, I put my faith in God, and people are just, everyone's responding with Bible verses and stuff like that. Like, it's not a great time to be Bryce Young right now. Yeah. I mean, he'll get an opportunity somewhere else. It looks like his confidence is just, like, totally shot. I think this is probably the right move for the Panthers. You got to figure out what else the heck you have on your roster. Tepper cannot just fire another dude to try to make Bryce Young work. I looked it up, and it's something like, there's been like 9 coaches in Panthers history, and Tepper is either hired or fired 6 of them already. So 2/3 of them. Like, you just cannot continuously churn stuff out. So, like, everyone's got to, like, dig in. Everyone's got to figure out what the heck we have here and what the heck we can build on that. And if that means Bryce has to be, at the very least, the second thought right now, then, like, maybe that's what the team needs to do. But you're past the point of trying to shoehorn this pick to make sure that it works and making sure that's the number one priority for your entire team.
I guess I'm torn, because I understand exactly what you're saying too. And I understand. And I do think there's a piece of it where they were potentially going to lose the locker room too, if it kept going in this direction, which is another potential nightmare. But, like, man, like, you're the only thing, you're not playing for anything right now. If you're Carolina, there is no light at the end of the 2024 tunnel. Like, if winning 2 or 3 games is, I guess, the light that you're looking for, then all right, maybe Andy Dalton can get you to that, you know, that destination. But it's like, to me, in those situations, like, I almost want to see, like, let's get the young guys in there. Let's see what they can do, including Bryce Young. And, like, is there any way to salvage this and continue to work with them? To me, like, I would rather spend almost this season saying, like, is there any way we can fix Bryce Young, which is maybe more important than anything else that you might be able to semi-accomplish through the rest of the season from a win-loss standpoint. So I totally get what you're saying too. Either way, it's a double-edged sword. They're an awful, awful franchise.
And they're in a really, bad spot.
Really bad spot right now. So it's not like there's anything that that they can do to, like, completely solve this problem. But to me, it kind of goes against what I would normally do in that situation where you're completely FUBAR anyway. Like, get the young guys in and see if any of them develop.
If it wasn't for, like, 5 different play callers over 2 years getting canned, I'd probably be on the same boat. But at this point, it's... I mean, it looks like his confidence is shaken
too. It does. And if that's the other thing too, if they're like, we're going to sit him down because we just feel like he needs a rest, and we're going to try to get his confidence back and build him up on the backside, and we hope to get him some opportunities, and maybe it's going to be a drive here or there that we feel like we can get a, like, I'm totally for that. Like, sometimes you just need a reset button, and maybe Bryce Young just needs a reset button. So I can understand that a little bit more. It just felt like this is coming across of, like, we've got to find a way to salvage the season. And it's like, oh, you are so far past that. That is not what your goal should be at this point.
Yeah, no, I think it's more like, we can't even evaluate the run game because our pass game is putting us behind so far. And, you know, our defense can't stay on track with some of these teams. And, you know, we're going 3 and out or throwing a pick or something on our first drive. We're down the entire game. Our entire game plan just gets thrown out. Right. Like, I think it's more that type of stuff than, and the Panthers being like, we can't evaluate even our own roster right now, which is a tough thing. Then it is like, oh, we got to make a change for a playoff push. I don't think anyone in Carolina is thinking that. Yeah.
No, I agree with that. Could have had Malik Willis for a 7th-round pick, but unfortunately teams weren't wise enough to pull. I'm just kidding. Justice, phenomenal stuff as always. Where can we find all of your phenomenal work?
AcmePackingCompany.com. I'm going to turn a lot of those stats that you just heard into content over the next couple of days. So go check that out. And then find me on Twitter at JUMOSQ.
Make sure to give him a follow. He's the absolute best. And make sure to be checking out Acme Packing Company every single day. I know I do. It is where I check all of my final updates before I go live, just to make sure I'm like, all right, what did I miss? Did I not see anything? You guys are on top of absolutely everything and have all the best statistical analysis and all the nerdy stuff that I absolutely love as well. So make sure to check it out. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Justice and I, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.